I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show. I am here as usual, 9 to 11 o'clock here on 103.9 WIAB, offering up the safe space for independent thinkers out there. Got lots to cover today. Next hour, we'll have Cade Yates in. The Mississippi legislature is wrapping up its session. We're going to find out exactly where everything ended up. I got to tell you, you know, Americans for Prosperity, they focus just on economic issues in the state. And they've got, particularly when it comes to economics, they're certainly a very libertarian-minded organization. They are not a political organization. I don't know they would identify themselves as libertarian, but they, you know, they want economic freedom for us. And that's what libertarians want. Hands off government. Just let private industry do what private industry does best and provide goods and services at reasonable prices. People who support AFP, and I know many of them, you know, we all kind of want any of these groups to get in there. If they've got the ear of legislatures, we want them to get involved in all kinds of different issues. We want them involved in the CRT. We want them involved in medical marijuana. But it really is good that they focus in on the economic stuff. There's other groups that focus on the other things. Because each week that I have them in here, I realize I cover so many different topics and look at so many different things that I can't keep up with exactly what the legislature's doing as far as our economic freedom in this state. So I have to have them come back in. I honestly can't quite figure out where we ended up on income taxes. So anyway, if you want to know where we stand economically in this state, if we made any progress in the legislative session, then let's stick around. And Cade Yates will be in with us next hour. Americans for Prosperity also having an open house tonight. And we'll talk about those events. Those are great. If you want to meet some like-minded people, some freedom-loving people, Americans for Prosperity is a great place to meet some of them. I've made a lot of good friends through some of the programs that they've done there. Plenty to get to today. We're going to do a little bit of economics. Really kind of funny what's going on. Not funny, ha-ha, but funny, holy cow. First off, though, I'll do my quotes of the day, and I got a little swamped by some quotes today. You know, some days I run across so many that I want to do, and they set the stage for the show. So we'll start off with the great Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul. He said, if you like small government and you need to work hard at having a strong national defense that is not so militant, personal liberty is the purpose of government, to protect liberty, not to run your personal life, not to run the economy, and not to pretend that we can tell the world how they ought to live. We were so close to having that man as our president. He would have done such a great job of educating the American people on both sides of the aisle, but the Republican Party sabotaged him. I watched that happen live time as I was involved in his 2008 campaign. Nietzsche said, the snake which cannot cast its skin has to die. As well, the minds which are prevented from changing their opinions, they cease to be mined. As I see a lot of this. If you cannot grow and evolve and change an opinion, change your mind on certain things, you no longer have a mind. You just have a kind of a recording system. George Bernard Shaw said, the single biggest problem of communication is the illusion that it has taken place. That's a thinker. That was a thinker. I had to look at it for a second and go, oh, I get what he's saying there. The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place. And that is because so often people don't really hear what you say. Now, this is not necessarily good news for somebody who comes on air for 2 hours and tries to put new ideas out there. But it is true. You've had these conversations with your friends where you can tell no matter what you say to them, they're really just waiting for your mouth to stop moving so they can say what they were going to say before you said anything in the first place. There's not a whole lot of communication among most people. It's usually just talking. I'm talking and then you're talking and neither one of us is listening. Now, this I thought was pretty fascinating. I want you to think about this one because this will lead us into the show today. It's another George Orwell. I'm sorry, I can't get away from him. We're living in Orwellian times. We should be paying attention to the man who chronicled these things, knew what was coming. This is from 1984, George Orwell. He said, all this is a digression. And, you know, George Orwell in 1984, he talks about, you know, what the elites are thinking, what they're doing, what their plans are to subjugate the rest of the population to gain total control. And so he's got a passage in the book. He says, all of this is a digression. The power we have to fight for night and day, is not power over things, but over men. How does one man assert his power over another? By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough. Unless he is suffering, how can you be sure that he is obeying your will and not his own? Power is in inflicting pain and humiliation. Power is in tearing human minds to pieces and putting them together again in shapes of your own choosing. Do you begin to see then what kind of world we are creating? The important part of that passage is, how does one man assert his power over another? By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough. Unless he is suffering, how can you be sure that he is obeying your will and not his own? Think about the last 2 years and the news I'm going to get into in just a second here. They made you suffer. Obedience was not enough. They had to make you suffer. They had to make you lose your job, lose your family connections. They had to take your children's lives away from them for a couple of years. They had to make the children suffer. And now, in the throes of inflation, they're making you suffer. In Ukraine, they're making the Ukrainian people suffer. For 10 years, the United States government has tried to make the Russian people suffer. They want you to hurt. I guess this is the only way. And George Orwell was connected to intelligence agencies and these kinds of things. He wasn't just some fantastical novelist. The roots of Orwell and Huxley are all intertwined with things like MI6 over in England. They were kind of plugged into the power elite. It's one of these things that's almost they're basically telling us what they're going to do. And the thing is they want to make you suffer. You know, yesterday, I really set this week up very well to pat myself on the back here. I told you on Monday that the Federal Reserve, the Death Star, can destroy your financial future with a sentence or two. That's how vulnerable we are and how dependent we are and how powerful they are. And the next day they released a statement, the market tanked 3%, the next day another 2.5%, you know, particularly in the growth stocks. And I was just illustrating this to say, see, I told you. And this is not something new. I've been watching them do this for years and years. But this institution is so powerful that you understand, y'all, all your retirement money, it just sits there at the pleasure of the Federal Reserve. At any time, they can pull the plug on it. They will turn your retirement nest egg into about 20% of what it is right now, should they choose. Any time. I mean, they could be sitting behind a desk right now going, huh, I wonder if I should say something. And when you couple this with George Orwell, where they understand the nature of power is in making you suffer, just yesterday. So I've kind of narrated this. On Tuesday, the Fed put out a statement and the markets tanked for 2 days in a row. Yesterday, New York Fed President Bill Dudley issued another post-service op-ed warning. And this was titled, he did an op-ed, quote, if stocks don't fall, the Fed needs to force them. Listen to this piece from for one of our Federal Reserve people. He said, it's hard to know how much the U.S. Federal Reserve will need to do to get inflation under control, but one thing is certain. To be effective, it'll have to inflict more losses on stock and bond investors than it has so far. Inflict. It'll have to inflict more losses. Investors should pay closer attention to what Powell has said. Financial conditions need to tighten. If this doesn't happen on its own, which seems unlikely, the Fed will have to shock markets to achieve the desired response. This would mean hiking the federal funds rate considerably higher than currently anticipated. One way or another, to get inflation under control, the Fed will need to push bond yields higher and stock prices lower. They're telling it to you, right to your face. Your financial advisor is telling you, hang in there, buy the dips. You got to be in the market, because you understand the dirty little secret that your financial advisor doesn't make any money unless you've got it. You've got stock and mutual fund investments under their umbrella. I was a financial advisor. I know what the game is. They're never going to tell you to pull out of the market. They're always going to tell you it's a good time to buy. They're always going to tell you over a long enough time horizon, the average stock market return is blah, 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 blah. So they are looking to inflict some pain. Now, to be fair, they do need to do this, actually, because they've created such a colossal mess, and the only way that they can address this inflation is to raise interest rates, which will tank the stock market. But the stock market wouldn't be this high if it hadn't been for all their manipulation in the first place. They created the problem, and now they are going to make you suffer as they correct the problem. Here are some headlines that I found interesting on MarketWatch. So I got a little stack here on MarketWatch. How high do mortgage rates need to climb before it's time to worry? Above 5.75, says UBS. That's the big bank. Here's another headline. Here's how much a 40-year mortgage would save you each month versus a 30-year loan and the ultimate cost. So here we go. They've done this with cars, right? See, they're always seeking to hide this inflation from you. First of all, they wholesale lie to you about inflation running at 1.5%, but anybody paying for health care, kids' college, insurance, anything knows that inflation runs at 5 to 10% a year, time in and time out, notwithstanding the last year where it's 15 to 20%. We all know, we've seen in our own lives, that inflation is much higher than the 1.5. So they essentially lie to you. But here's the other little dirty trick they did. They did this with cars. They raised the price of cars, but they know that the American people are payment people. We want to know what we can afford each month. We don't care about the cost of anything. How much is it going to cost me on a monthly basis? And so what they did with cars, well, they started out with the 3-year loans on cars. I don't know actually where it started out. It might have been a year back when cars were $3,000 for a family car. They started out with a 3-year loan. Next thing you know, you were doing a 5-year loan. Now they've got car loans out there that are 7 and 8 years long, and that way you can spread out your payments. The payments stay the same. You just end up financing for much longer. Now, apparently, and I don't know if this is already in the market. I've never priced one. They're talking about not that 30-year mortgage that has kind of been the benchmark for American families for decades. Let's go ahead and make it a 40-year mortgage. We'll spread out those payments for you. Don't worry about all the extra money and interest. Don't worry about all the extra cost of the house that keeps appreciating because of low interest rates. We'll just spread those payments out. We'll make it a little bit less painful for you every month. In the end, we'll end up getting more anyway. This is what the banks are thinking. So I guess the 40-year mortgage is coming. And then the last headline here is mortgage rates zoom past 4.5%. And here's what home buyers need to know. I looked at this story. Mortgage rates keep climbing, and that poses a major challenge for families looking to score a deal during the busy spring home buying season. The benchmark 30-year fixed-rate mortgage averaged 4.67% for the week ending March 31st, according to data released by the Freddie Mac on Thursday. That represents a 1/4 percentage point increase from the previous week. Now, what I think this is interesting about, I told you that when the Fed speaks, they affect everything. It's the most important institution in your life that nobody talks about. So I did a little bit of math here. Before the Federal Reserve spoke the other day and caused the 10-year bond to go up, which increased mortgage rates, the 30-year bond, 30-year mortgage was about 4.42%. So I did a little bit of calculation. To buy a $300,000 house with 10% down over 30 years, that house would cost you $597,988. After the Fed spoke, that same house with the same down payment at the same price was going to cost you $612,802. In a day, with a couple of sentences, the Federal Reserve cost you $15,000. But nobody wants to talk about them. Now, to be fair, mortgage rates do always move. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back. I did some interesting calculations. Anybody interested in what the housing market's going to do as interest rates rise? Does anybody pay attention to this? As I say, we're payment people. That's really all we care about. But if you've recently bought a house, if you think you might be moving in a couple of years and 2 years and 5 years, there's some storm clouds on the horizon. I don't know if people know what happens to home prices for every 1% increase in mortgage rates. Do you know what happens to the value of every home when that happens? Well, I'll show you when we come back. Stay with me. Here's the thing. I would imagine if I focus grouped a bunch of talk radio listeners and said, you know, different topics, you know, Biden war, economics, I would imagine economics would be at the very bottom of the list. And I do a lot of economics on this show. So maybe not the best thing for popularity and ratings. It's not sexy stuff. If you don't understand basic economics, you really don't understand anything, including politics. Now, everybody knows money drives everything. Decisions that are made, policies that are enacted are about money. The vaccination program wasn't about your health. It was about big pharma profits. Now, we understand that. That's not a complex thing to understand. But if you know that money drives everything, you better have a basic understanding of economics. And if you want to protect your family, you sure as hell better understand what's going on right now. That's why I think this is important. If you have enjoyed the run-up in the market because the Federal Reserve has been printing up money that's been going in the stock market and your 401k is doing well, I suggest you cash out your 401k and set aside at least half of that money and give it to your children, because your children are the ones who are going to pay for it. This is the selfishness of U.S. adults now. We are happy to dump a bunch of debt on future generations. We were warned by Thomas Jefferson at the founding of the country. It is incumbent upon every generation to pay its own debts, to not saddle future generations with suffering. We've decided to do the opposite. Everybody thinks they're a genius because they've done so well in the stock market over the years. And people like me, the doom and gloomers, the chicken littles out there, I'll be honest with you, we've sat it out. We have not seen the appreciation. So God love you. You were smarter than me to put your money there. But all of this is paid for with our children's inheritance of this country. And what I see coming right now is an absolute train wreck. This inflation has changed everything, and we're going to see some big changes to our economy to address this inflation. The Fed is out there telling you. You got a former Fed governor out there telling you they need to inflict some serious pain on stock investors. Nobody's telling you that. CNBC isn't telling you that, because CNBC serves the markets themselves. They serve Wall Street. Wall Street wants your money in their accounts. Here's how it does affect you, though. This is kind of interesting to me, anyway. And I'll admit, I don't know how many times I've used the term, I'm an economics nerd. I find it pretty fascinating. At some point, it's going to pay off for me. I don't know when. You know, I sold a house at what I thought was the top of the market. It turned out I was about 2 or 3 years too early. I didn't lose any money on any real estate, but I left some appreciation on the table by being too early. But it is interesting to understand economics in the housing market. So interest rates have gone up about a percentage point. About a percentage point is referred to as 100 basis points. So 1/100th of a percent is 1 basis point. So they've gone about a full percent or 100 basis points. For every 1% that mortgage rates rise, what happens to the value of a home if, and it is my theory, it is my belief that Americans are payment people. We just want to know what we can afford on a monthly basis. The price of anything really doesn't matter. It's, can we float the note? That's really all that matters. And this is why they extend mortgage periods and car loans and stuff, because it allows you to do a smaller payment over a longer period of time. We don't care about the period of time. Can we float the note? So I did some calculations real quick, and I want you to notice a trend here. And what I did was I did a $300,000 house. I think the average American home now, the median home, I'm not sure if it's average or median, I'm not sure. But anyway, it's well over $300,000 now. But for Central Mississippi purposes, let's just use a $300,000 house. If you put 10% down, all these calculations are a $300,000 house with, or a It's a house with 10% down. It's not always $300,000. Anyway, let me see if I can do this well on the radio. Let's just say you're budgeted for about $1,600, $1,700 a month. Right now at around 4%, well, it was 4%. At around 4%, you can afford a $300,000 house. That gets you at $1,684 a month in payment. If interest rates go up to 5% and you still want to keep that payment right around the same, it's around $1,689. But if interest rates are 5%, you can't afford a $300,000 house anymore. Now you can afford a $270,000 house. So you see that interest rates going from 4% to 5% means you can afford 10% less house. If the interest rates go from 5% up to 6% and you want to keep your payment right around there, this payment would be at $1,668, so still the $1,600 range there. If interest rates are 6%, you can only afford a $240,000 house. If interest rates go to 7%, you can afford a $210,000 house. So if interest rates go from 4% up to 7%, and they're headed that way, they may not go in a straight line. Nothing in finance really goes in straight lines, up or down. But those people who bought $300,000 houses, and if you plan on staying there for a long time and the payment's comfortable to you and you enjoy where you live, this really isn't anything to sweat about, but it does tell you what happens to housing. And these are why these things, why homes can lose value. They tell you that, oh, a home is a great investment. It's the cornerstone of the American dream. At these prices, I'm not so sure. So if interest rates go from 4% to 7%, that $300,000 house becomes a $210,000 house. The Fed has been able to hide this from you by constantly pushing interest rates lower so everybody felt rich. Because it goes in the opposite direction, right? In 2009, I got a mortgage at 5.5%. I was thrilled. That was historically great. We now believe that interest rates on homes are supposed to be in the 3%. That's an anomaly. It's not normal. And I don't do this, well, this is the new normal. We just accept it now. No, this was artificially created, and it is going to bust. Unless wages go up substantially. I mean substantially, and there's really not any signs out there that this is going to happen. Then as interest rates go up, the price of these homes go down. A $300,000 home, suddenly worth $210,000, is going to inflict a lot of pain on anybody who needs to move and get out of that house, even if they can. I hope those. Basically, for every 1% move in interest rates, you lose 10% of the value of your home. And this is what we're about to witness. You think that that's not going to have any long-lasting ramifications, particularly of a generation of people now who treat their homes like a piggy bank? Every time rates go down, your house becomes worth a little bit more because, we're payment people. When the rates go down, more people can afford your house because the payments go down, because interest rates go down, so you're able to ask a little bit more for your house. And everybody's been taking that increased equity and convinced by the bankers to do what? Take out a HELOC loan. Take money out of your house. It's just a piggy bank. We didn't learn our lesson in 2008. Refinance activity and things like that, cash out refis, have been on the upswing again. Same thing that led to the 2008 disaster has been going on for several years now. So these are the storm clouds on the horizon. The only alternative to this, rising interest rates, crushing the housing market, is for the Fed to retreat and start lowering interest rates again, trying to keep mortgage rates low to save the housing market. And if they do that, you ain't seen nothing yet when it comes to inflation. They got you coming and going. And think about this for just one second in closing on this topic with the banks. In one of my calculations, I figured out that a $270,000 loan for 30 years at the current interest rates, you end up paying back $612,802. You borrowed $270,000. You pay back $612,000 over those 30 years. Isn't that a great gig to be a bank? See, they never had that money actually to loan you anyway. We've got something called fractional reserve banking. They just had to have about 10% of it on deposit with their institution, and they're able to loan out 9 times that amount. They never had this money. yet they do get to collect that interest. In this example, they get to collect, on a 30-year mortgage, they get to collect $342,802 in interest from you over the course of 30 years on money that they never actually even had. Wouldn't you love, in your subdivision, in your neighborhood, in your town, to be able to just loan out money you never had and collect interest on it all the way? This is what banking is, and as I said, if Henry Ford said, if the American people ever actually understood the banking system in the United States, there'd be a revolution by tomorrow morning. Well, that's what banking is. They loan you money they never had, and they get you to pay real dollars from your income over the course of a long period of time, and they actually do. That's when the money becomes real. They actually get that money. Loaning out money that you never, ever had. That's a good gig. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'm constantly on guard for any of my own hypocrisies. I talk a lot about in the show about the hypocrisy of the left and the right. Plenty on both sides. Most people can't see it on their own side, of course. They see it. It just screams at them from the other side. Point it out in a heartbeat. I love Defiant L's Twitter feed where they put out people's tweets, you know, kind of what they said 6 months ago and what they say now. It'll be completely different. A lot of liberals from the Trump years talking about totalitarian control or wars or any of these things, and then now they carry water for Biden for doing the exact same things they were accusing Donald Trump of doing. So we can see these things, you know, when they're on the other side, we can see them very clearly. You know, very few of us really self-reflect on those things. I think the war on drugs is one of the biggest one for conservatives out there that are all about freedom, liberty, and limited government, that you've been so sheep-dipped in fear about drugs, which are bad things, but there's plenty of things in the world that can destroy lives, that you believe that the government needs to protect you from them. You understand that the overreach of coronavirus was ridiculous to try to protect you from something that you're perfectly capable of protecting yourself from, and sometimes unfortunate things happen. We're willing to accept those risks, but when it comes to drugs, the DAs and the sheriffs tell you, oh, we can't have that. We got to put citizens in cage if they possess this plant. There's hypocrisy everywhere. Here's why I bring it up. I may be a hypocrite. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm a hypocrite and a scumbag. I've asked some other people this question. And they always tell me that I'm not a hypocrite and I'm not a scumbag, but they may just be being polite. I'll tell you a little game I'm playing right now. And as a libertarian who wants nothing from the government except to be left alone, Wednesday, the U.S. Department of Education announced another extension of the pause on student loan repayment, interest, and collections through August 31st, 2022. This is the sixth extension of the pause, which was first established by the Trump administration in March of 2020, at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. There's so much difference between these two parties in there. The student loan moratorium was previously set to expire on May 1st. Quote, we are still recovering from the pandemic and the unprecedented economic disruption it caused. This is what President Biden said in a statement. Of course, I will point out every single time it said, the pandemic did not cause the economic disruption. The bureaucratic response to the pandemic created the economic disruption. They added that the continued pause will help borrowers achieve greater financial security and support the Department of Education's efforts to continue improving student loan programs. During his campaign, Biden promised to cancel at least $10,000 of federal student loans, but the president has been silent on when and if a broader cancellation will happen. Little more than a year in office, Biden has approved more than $17 billion in loan debt forgiveness. What a great guy. What a great guy. Money owed to the U.S. taxpayers, he just forgave it. Uncle Joe. What a man. You know, this is like the banks. The banks get to loan you money and collect interest on money they didn't even have. Joe Biden gets to campaign on forgiving loans of money that he doesn't have any skin in the game on. taxpayers loaned this money to students, and Joe Biden just comes in with his magic wand, wants a pat on the back for saying, oh, don't worry about paying back those pesky taxpayers. They'll be okay. A little more than a year into office, Biden has approved more than $17 billion in loan debt forgiveness for more than 700,000 borrowers, including students with disabilities. I love this one. Public service workers. So government employees. He waved the magic wand. It's not enough that they're on the taxpayer teat for salary and benefits and the real estate that they go to and all of the other perks that come with being a government employee. You also don't have to pay your student loans. And students who were defrauded by their schools. That sounds like something that should have been settled in a civil court, not by just waving a wand to get rid of taxpayer debts. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain said last month, however, that the administration is exploring options for further relief and wants to make a decision on loan forgiveness in the coming months. Translation, right before the midterms. Right before the midterms, they will float out another one of these carrots in front of the debt slave students. Hey, we're going to forgive some of the student loans, but, you know, we can't do it unless you send us back to Congress and back to legislating. Quote, Joe Biden right now is the only president in history where no one's paid on their student loans for the entirety of his presidency. Ron Klain said this on a podcast, Pod Save America, a truly repugnant podcast. Quote, and so the question whether or not there's some executive action on student debt forgiveness when payments resume is a decision we're going to take before payments resume. So they've extended the deadline out to August 1st, just a couple of months before election time, and then they'll make a decision on whether they're going to wave their magic wand and just forgive a bunch of student loans. This is money that was taken unwillingly from the U.S. taxpayer, loaned to students to go to get largely meaningless degrees for many people, not all, but many. And now this government's going to come in and just go, oh, you don't have to worry about it. It's just a rounding. It's $17 billion so far. We can do another $50, $60, $100 billion in student loan forgiveness. It's no big deal. Here's where it becomes personal. I'm not going to ask you this question. I'm doing self-reflection on this. I really feel a little icky, but my son's in college. He's gotten a bunch of scholarships and grants. Great kid. Good grades. Maintained good grades. He's also working 40 hours a week while he's going to school. He's not necessarily happy about it, but I kind of enjoy the life lesson it's teaching him. And I help him out because I'm proud of the fact that he is trying to carry a lot of his own load with him. But outside of his scholarships and grants and everything else he qualified for to go to college, he's about $3,000 uncovered by scholarships each year. Now, this is not a whole lot on an annual basis. I would not have allowed my child to go to school and emerge with $60, $90, $120,000 in debt. I would have told him he needs to work. We need to figure out how to pay for it in cash. There was no way in the world I was going to allow him to leave with just massive student loans that he would be carrying around with him for the rest of his life. But he didn't have that situation, so I fully encouraged him to go to college. I wanted him to have the social experience. I really think I almost value that more than a college education at this point. I had such a good time in college, I didn't want to deny my kids that experience. But nevertheless, he's going to leave college having about $10,000 to $12,000 of out-of-pocket costs. Now, we could have paid this all along the way. It's not a whole lot per year, $3,000 per year. But we didn't. I told him we're going to take out student loans for everything. There's no interest on these things. It's interest-free money. And I told him because we're going to watch and see what happens with student loan forgiveness. Now, I'll tell you, it makes me feel icky as a libertarian who rails against this government. Am I actually some kind of a welfare child? Am I actually participating? You know, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Should I be part of the solution and pay this out of pocket, ignore and not take the student loan forgiveness? And they may not do it. And I've told them when you get out of school, if there's no student loan forgiveness and your loans become due, we'll just go ahead and pay them off. I don't want him carrying this debt around. And we have agreed, his mother and myself have agreed, we're going to pay for you while you go to college. As long as you're getting good grades and behaving yourself, then we're going to make sure that you get through college and then you're on your own. You're off the payroll. But I really do kind of struggle with this thing. I mean, an interest-free loan and student loans that my son qualifies for gave us a little bit of wiggle room just to say, well, I mean, you know, might as well pay with inflated dollars down the road, meaning that $12,000 was worth a lot more 4 years before he starts school than it will be at the end of 4 years. You understand what I'm saying? You pay back money with inflated dollars means it's actually less of a burden on you. I don't think I explained that well, but that's the case. So we've forestalled this, but I'm just thinking that if this nut job government is going to forgive student loans, then why in the world should I pay for the money done? Now, as I say this out loud, I'm questioning myself. I may end up pulling the trigger and paying this money like a sap. Does it make me a sucker to refuse student loan forgiveness and pay because of my disgust for the federal government and the fact that they're doing this in the first place? Back in 2009, I bought a home after the financial crisis, and I was given a $8,000 tax credit. Now, that was a little different because a tax credit means it comes straight off of your taxes, and I believe that all taxes are unconstitutional, immoral, and theft. So by not stealing $8,000 from me, I was certainly willing to do it. But I did email all of my friends and say, hey, I just wanted to thank you, all the fellow taxpayers who didn't buy a house this year. The federal government will probably have to take on $8,000 more in debt because they're not collecting that from me because I got this tax credit. I just kind of joked about it. But basically, it was them giving me a year off of raping me financially. So I took it. This is a little different. This is basically a giveaway. Saddling the taxpayers with my son's student loans. It does make me feel icky, and as I say this out loud, as I kind of talk through this, maybe it is just too gross of a thing for me to do. Or should I just be an accelerationist? I mean, the government takes so much from us. That feels like a justification. As it comes out of my mouth, it sounds like I'm justifying it because the government is so evil, so corrupt, so profligate in its spending. That any little fight back, any little morsel that you can get. Now, when the COVID came and there were PPP loans going out and stimulus checks, there were some people who stood on principle and said, I'm not cashing that check. And I said, why the hell not? The government takes from you constantly. It is government that created this inflation. Government overspending, facilitated by the Federal Reserve, created this inflation. You were paying. This inflation is a tax on you. Do you understand this? It's a tax. It's not an accident. It's not a natural business cycle. Inflation is a tax, and one of the most nefarious taxes because it really crushes the poor. So the government hurts you so bad. The government forced your business to close. Take that PPP money. They actually inflicted that kind of pain on a business owner. Who am I to say, don't take that? Don't take that federal government. I mean, that's just government welfare to take that. No, the government came in and forced people to close their businesses. Some people did quite well on the PPP loans. That's a little gray area as far as a libertarian idea, but I'm just telling you, this government takes and takes and takes and takes. But does that justify actually getting something back? I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I'm working through it. I've still got another year, 18 months to try to figure it out. But if creepy Uncle Joe waves his magic wand, should I just take my money? I feel like I should take the money and maybe just hand it to my son, buy him a few gold bars and say, just sit on this because you're going to need it. This government's not done with us. So we'll see. You have any opinions on that? Mike Madison at WYAB.com. I'll be right back. I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. All right, only about a minute or so left in this hour, and then we're going to come back. Cade Yates with Americans for Prosperity will be in to see where we ended up at the Mississippi legislature. I am preparing myself to be wildly underwhelmed, disappointed, and disgusted. Maybe there's some ray of hope that comes out of this stuff. A super red state. Holy cow. We're such sad, uncreative people here in Mississippi electing these same people over and over and over again because of an R behind their name, and we get bupkis for it. You know what we get? At least we're not a blue state. That's where we are. At least Kristen Whitmer, is that her first name? The governor of Michigan? At least she's not our governor. That's the measuring stick by Tate Reeves. At least we're not ruled by Cuomo. That's the line we have. That's the bar that has to be overcome in Mississippi to keep your seat, apparently. You just have to not be one of the worst Democrats out there. Anyway, As I say, I prepare to be underwhelmed and underimpressed, notwithstanding the work of Americans for Prosperity that year after year goes up there and fights to try to get Mississippi off the bottom of the heap. They're fighting quite an entrenched power. You know, I do that segment trying to figure out how scumbaggy I am if I take advantage of the magical wand waving of student loan forgiveness for my son for about the $12,000 he may have in student loans when he gets out of school. And then I see this headline, Palm Springs looks to give trans residents monthly cash payments. Well, I do make this vow to you. I have not yet decided what I'll do about student loans. But I do pledge right here on the air, publicly, I will not transition just to get a check from the government. That's where I draw the line. I have some longstanding principles. I will not transition to a woman in order to get a check from our government. So, and the student loan stuff's up in the air, but I draw the line at starting to cut stuff off in order to get a few bucks from the government every month. When I come back, Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Thursday. Every Thursday, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour. We have Americans for Prosperity come in and tell us what's been going on. The Mississippi legislature has finally wrapped. It's felt like a long season, but anyway, we're going to get the recap, the conclusion, the summary of exactly what's taking place. We got Cade Yates in with Americans for Prosperity. Cade, thanks as always for joining us.
Absolutely, man. Glad to be here.
So I'm just really excited. I know you're going to tell us all kinds of things have happened in Mississippi that are going to shoot us up the charts nationally, that economic freedom is we have achieved my anarcho-capitalist dream here in Mississippi through your tireless efforts at the state house. So they're done, huh?
Yeah, they're done. And as a good friend of mine says, the Republic is safe once more.
Yeah.
It's been a very interesting session. I mean, they had to extend it slightly longer just because of they needed to figure out the ARPA money, all the federal money flowing down through the COVID stuff. And so they extended a little bit longer, and they were going to, I think all that's going to mostly sewer and water projects. Just because that's probably been the biggest underlying issue. Like, all the big issues are out there during the legislature, but the biggest thing this year has been, you know, there's a lot of towns and cities around here that are like, well, we didn't manage our money well, or hey, we didn't have this or we didn't have that. Now our water system is about to go down.
So we're going to reward them for their lack of foresight and the proper management of their infrastructure. Yeah. We're going to reward them through, and this is COVID funds. Now, I do understand that they are testing water supplies and the feces in water supplies for COVID. Is that how they somehow attach this to COVID spending?
No, honestly, I'm still not sure of the red string from point A to point B and point A to point Z, like 15 strings later, about how it got there. But again, I think this has all been approved to go to general projects around, and
it's free money.
Yeah. It is just this ridiculous system where the feds have just said, we're going to print, 40%?
Yeah.
I think it was before COVID. The dollar had a certain amount, and now we've printed 40% more.
Yes, I mean, so it's M1, I believe, or M2 money supply. Yeah,
been
the most ever in the history of the world. So, you know, basically we should take a moment to thank all of our children, grandchildren, and those yet unborn for now funding whatever harebrained schemes they've got going for water, sewer, or whatever else they're spending this money on.
Yeah, the pork barrel that's somewhere in that just mess. And that's the crazy part is I was hoping, and I know that there was some good ideas on kind of forcing localities to save a certain amount of money over the next few years to where whatever the amount they take for water and sewer that they would save over the next 40 years, because that's the average lifespan of a water system, and then have the money again in 40 years to replace it. But I don't think that actually happened. And so we're very short-sighted, and so I think that's a ridiculous thing just to see all this money flowing in. And it's kind of the – unfortunately, we get a lot of the same reasoning behind – Medicaid expansion. Well, we got the money, use it. Or you know, they're offering it, let's take it. And it's so hard to say no to it. I understand that. But when it comes down to it, that's kind of been the biggest underlying thing is this ARPA money that nobody, you know, they weren't really sure where they were going to put it all. But, I mean, it went to a lot of places, but water and sewer was main one. So,
yeah.
But other than that, really, we've had some interesting bills this year. So one of my biggest pet peeves and one of the biggest ones that I'm so glad that it's, as we say, dead is the Tesla bill, this anti-Tesla bill that was going to restrict the amount of Tesla dealerships. Originally, there was going to be a they had whittled it down to where it'd be a year or so of anti-Tesla year where they couldn't set up a dealership and then they were going to revisit it in a year. But luckily, that's a no deal, and everything got shut down on that.
Well, I thought law in Mississippi already was. I mean, I thought the reason Tesla doesn't have a dealership right now is that we already had laws on the books that prohibited manufacturers from opening direct sales outlets in the state. Is that not the case?
So we're still trying to understand why this is, how there's still this workaround, but I believe the current law just allows that workaround, and Tesla should be, hopefully we'll have several dealerships coming into Mississippi soon, but I'm hoping over the next few years we can eliminate protectionist policies like this from all the books and say, hey, if you want to come to Mississippi and open up a dealership or open up any type of other healthcare facility like certificate of need laws, we're open to that. And so, but the biggest thing was, is this was going to make clear about direct from manufacturer sales, this clarity on the law.
Oh, so it was basically kind of using Tesla as an example and saying, we're just going to outright ban this. We're not going to allow nobody to be able to do it. Right now, it's just murky.
Yeah, and luckily, like I said, I mean, we've been through several iterations of this bill where it's been bad the entire time. But, you know, just keep whittling it down from going like, hey, we're not going to accept this bill here. We're not going to accept the bill when you say, hey, we'll allow electric cars, or we'll go down to, it's only going to be a year or whatever. No. We're going to work this down to where it's nothing, because it takes time. It takes a lot of conversations and a lot of hard conversations with people going, listen, it is not right that we are limiting the market in Mississippi. So we have to be able to eliminate laws like these and make sure that new laws don't pass that clarify that law and make sure that Tesla dealerships can't come into the state. Cause I mean, it honestly is ridiculous to me. This has been, like I said, one of the biggest sticking points for me is this absolutely obvious protectionist bill being put forward by people that are going to benefit from it.
And
this
who cronies. Is that? Is it a car dealership association or something
like that? Yeah, car dealerships that are locally owned. And again, I'm glad that they have businesses here. I'm glad that they're operating in the area. You know, they send paychecks home with people all the time. But the thing is Tesla's not going to be sold off their dealership lots. The other electric cars that are from independent dealers or independent manufacturers to consumer sales aren't going to be sold on their lot. And so they need to be able to work in a free market system where
compete.
You know, and there's no other, I've talked to people several times and there's no other industry that is this protected other than like healthcare. And we're working on that as well. So,
yeah. Last car I bought, I don't want to anger anybody, but last car I bought sitting on my couch. It took me about 15 minutes from one of the national companies.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was one of the easiest processes I've ever seen. Literally, I think it was 15 minutes and they said, okay, the car will be here and ready for you whenever you're ready to come pick it up. I mean, that was it. So, you know, it is all of these things, and there are, you know, great car dealerships. They work hard. Yeah. Like you say, they provide benefits. But, I mean, all of the protectionism just adds more cost to the consumer. I mean, competition always drives prices down. So it's in the best interest of average Mississippian who is not a car dealer to just have as much competition as possible.
Exactly. And again, I mean, we never want to – when someone wants to buy a Tesla, I mean, again – there is the
and it's not benefit. All just about Tesla.
Exactly.
They're just kind of the test case.
Exactly. Yeah. It is the it is the most obvious person who would be eliminated from competition or eliminated from the competition in Mississippi.
Because of their structure model.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so what we've seen is a lot of people that buy Teslas, it's not just because they're fast and they're well-built or whatever. It's because it's a status symbol. And so what they're going to do is they're not going to not buy a Tesla because you can't buy one in Mississippi. If you were going to buy a Tesla, you're going to drive to another state and buy a Tesla.
Well, some people do buy the Teslas for the warmth in the winter because they do tend to catch fire a lot.
Yes,
and sometimes on a cold winter day, a good car fire will really keep you warm. So,
and I've seen the quality control issues on some of them, just in the basic overall construction. And so I'm like, I would never buy a Tesla. I don't really want a Tesla. I enjoy my little Bronco. You know, I'm happy with that. But when it comes down to it,
it's because you hate the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
You hate Earth. Why do you hate Earth? What did Earth do to you?
Well, I feel like somebody's going to just make the argument that I'm in the pockets of some big oil company or something.
Russians.
Yeah, just because I drive a gasoline car.
I bet
car.
You got Russian gas just pulsing through that thing. Let me ask you one question. Totally off, you know, kind of what y'all do. But you think Tesla is going to make it as a leader in the electronic car? I look at Tesla. I've never seen a company doing so well with its stock price and all of the buzz around it with so much huge competition just springing up all around them.
Yeah.
Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen, long established places with huge pipelines, distribution pipelines, hundreds of billions of dollars, full research department. I mean, these are established car makers that have been around for 100 years that are putting out great electric cars.
Yeah.
And Tesla just kind of, their stock price and their image just kind of levitates like they're the only game in town. But you can't swing a dead cat without hearing about another established car company coming out with an electric car that is well rated and priced lower than a Tesla.
Absolutely.
Yet Tesla maintains this aura of inevitability as the leader of electric cars.
Yeah, and that's the thing is number one, I think there was some innovation there, but the biggest thing is, what we look at is Tesla's not really, and again, this is an uninformed, like I'm not a Tesla expert or anything like that. However, what I've seen is number one, their SpaceX program, all those things are worthy of mentioning. But I've heard that the biggest thing is they're a data company. Like their entire thing is they build data off of all of the tracking systems and all their stuff. And so that's, data companies are a big thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard batteries, you know, that they're
batteries.
But now I've heard, you know, there's other companies out there right now that seem to be making big moves because the battery is the big problem with electric.
Exactly.
We cannot go all electric right now as we sit with battery storage, but
exactly. So I appreciate that. I mean, it's off topic, but the thing is Tesla in itself, I don't think is just a car company. They are a wide array of companies. And again, I will call Tesla out and say, you know, they accept a lot of federal money to stay afloat.
Yes,
So I'm not defending
$8,000 a car.
Exactly. I'm not defending Tesla or Elon Musk because they're just defenders of freedom and liberty and lower taxes and less government.
Yeah, no.
I'm defending them because the free market matters and we must defend Mississippi from being a protectionist state. Again, when it comes down to it, I want the best price car for consumers from the best quality manufacturers, wherever they want to get that. That's up for them to decide. And for me, I don't really like buying cars online. I like going to the dealership, talking to someone that's informed. And that's why I'm very particular about what I buy, because I want to be able to ask all these questions and I want to feel comfortable with my purchase. And it's just like a lot of people that don't buy stuff on Amazon. Yes, Amazon's, you know, fulfills a need in our society for direct shipment and all that. But there's a lot of people who like to go into a store and hold a product and look at it and understand it. And
well, you can go in the metaverse for that now. You can't do pants though. In the metaverse, they don't have legs. Have you noticed this? Have you seen this?
No,
you do not have legs.
I've been avoiding
the metaverse. You should.
So
don't disappear into the metaverse.
Yeah, no,
I'll never
I'm
come
good.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm moving away from that. I'm trying to buy land and get out of society.
Exactly. I'm with you there. The further it goes that way, the further I run the other direction. So. All right, well, we'll get back into real legislative stuff. I'm taking you off your course. I know I'll get scolded during the break. But anyway, now we're talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. We're going to look. There's several other things that were settled during the legislature I want to find out about. Taxes, the ABC board. I want to find out where the teachers and the initiative process ended up. We talk about these things every week, but so many things change. I'm very curious as to where we ended up on
all
these things.
It will change a lot at the end of the session. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Okay. We'll be right back. Everybody stay with us.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show here talking to Cade Yates from Americans for Prosperity. I'll give you a dollar if you can tell me who sang that song in my bump music.
I wasn't paying attention. Who was it?
What? It's Cake. I play this song. You know, I work with some young kids, and I love doing it. I almost never have to pay out, but almost every song I hear that I know that means something to me, I'll offer a dollar if they can name the artist. And
well,
I
if you
would have
played Rage, I would have been fine. But
yeah, well, you know, the problem was the other day, so I play this game with these employees, and I'll say, you can tell me who sings this song, I'll give you a dollar. If you can tell me who the lead singer is, I'll give you another dollar. I do these things all the time. This one kid was wearing an Apple Watch, and I don't know anything about Apple Watches. I don't want an Apple Watch. I don't care about all that stuff, but he was pushing some buttons or whatever and getting all the answers, and I think I paid him out about $5 before I figured out what he was doing. He was searching the song, and he was getting all the stats on, you know, who sings it, and everything. He was just... It's a young black kid, and I can't remember who. It was like a Melissa Etheridge song or something. I was like, how does this kid know Melissa Etheridge? He got me for a little while, but I'm on to him now. But anyway. Oh, yeah. All right. So other things you wanted to talk about, the alcoholic beverage control system. They got the big a warehouse up in Gluckstadt. They've got a stranglehold in this in this very red supermajority freedom and prosperity state of Mississippi. The state controls every drop of liquor that comes within our borders. What's going on with that?
Well, and that's the crazy part is this one doesn't surprise me as much, just because you still have a lot of these prohibitionist styles of, you know, we're going to view alcohol. I mean, I've been told some crazy things about alcohol at events, and so this is one of the less crazier parts. But I will say we had the Tesla bill dying. That's the like green, good to go, love it. Then you have the kind of yellow, the medium. You know, it's kind of good, kind of bad.
You mean Mississippi? It should be our state color.
Sure,
should be yellow.
Yeah. Well, it's on the flag now. So, so what we did, we didn't get full privatization of the ABC like we were hoping for, because that's been really what we've been pushing the last few years, is just a full privatization of the system to get the government out of the alcoholic beverage system and our alcohol beverage control system and get them out of the warehouse in Madison County and get them out of it. I mean, that's where they should be. Unfortunately,
like most other states do.
Yes, like most other states do. And so, unfortunately, what we got was a mix of kind of where we wanted to be. And this is kind of how politics works in Mississippi. You put a good bill forward. You push the good bill. You had the Senate, who had the really bad bill of they're just going to build another warehouse. And
at taxpayer expense.
At taxpayer expense, and just build it off of that. And then you had the House plan that was full privatization, which we were so happy about. But you kind of got the middle. So what we got was the next best thing, honestly. The operation of the warehouse and distribution will be contracted to a private entity after an RFP process and bidding process. So
let me ask you this. Yeah, go ahead. In the state of Mississippi, are those things honest? I mean, you know, just hearing you say that, my spidey sense goes off that somebody's about to get a big fat contract to manage all the alcohol distribution in the state of Mississippi. And if they know the right people, then they're going to end up getting it's this idea of the public-private partnership.
Yes,
that is that is just code word for monster scam most of the time. So
yeah, well, and that's the thing is my spidey senses went off when I received the information about this, because for me, I think there's a huge contract issue and bidding issue on various public projects of water, sewer, roads and bridges, all that. However, what I actually found out about this is the original plan of privatization was only going to be pretty much three companies that could bid on it. Now, with this process, it's actually opening up to more companies. We actually have more options. Now, again, there's still the opportunity for the government to mess it up, because that's what they're
best
at.
Yes.
However, what we will see is one company, we'll see companies bidding on the Madison location and a new location, again, that will be built out of bond money. So they'll take a loan out from the taxpayers, want to be clear about that, to build a new facility, but it'll be managed by a private entity. And the bond will be paid back off of the tax revenue from the actual facility.
What is the point of the state controlling it? Was it?
It's purely money. I mean, it's $100 million a year in tax revenue, and I mean, we're going to be honest about that.
But aren't they? I mean, alcohol always has a tax associated with it. I know there's like federal tax stamps on alcoholism still, I believe. But I mean, wouldn't they collect taxes on it sold through any entity? If I wanted to open up and start, you know, basically like a monster liquor store that could provide liquor to restaurants and everything else, they're still getting taxes off of that, aren't they?
They'll provide the sales tax, but then you'll have they offer another, or they're taking another bottleneck and putting it there.
Are they marking products up?
Oh, I mean, I think it's I don't want to give a number right now because I cannot remember the exact number, but there is a markup at the warehouse.
So they're basically a distributor. So they're making profit from this thing. Yeah.
And that's that's why we are 100% against the idea of government involved in alcohol, because it's just offering more chokeholds on providing
and raising the price to the consumer
and raising the price on the consumer. However, unfortunately, what we see now is. What I will say is the next best thing on being able to operate it outside of the government's control. Because I mean, right now alcohol is not being handled well in Mississippi. The
it's
facilities
very frustrating to
the facilities are falling behind, and hopefully we will actually see a system that gets alcohol to individuals. And that's not really the plan. That's not really the original intent of what we wanted. But again, getting a private company in there minus a government agency running it. It's a step in the right direction. Now, again, that is a yellow kind of circle issue where it's not what we wanted, but it's kind of where we ended up. And hopefully over the next few years, we can say, hey, this privatization worked inside the facility. Why don't we just get y'all out of the facility altogether? You know, pay back the bonds, get all the stuff, get out of it completely, because it's okay for private companies to actually step in and do things for consumers, because they can handle it just fine.
Why did they need to pass a bond to fund this thing when they just got $1.8 billion extra dollars sloshing around from COVID money?
That's the good question.
If anything has some application to what they put us through with COVID, it's drinking. I mean, you would think that would certainly qualify.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. That's the hard part, is I've tried to figure out the rationale behind deciding where money goes and how it's used and how they got around the loophole of, you know, this is COVID money, so we have to use it for COVID relief and all that. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how the rationale happens, but you're right. I mean, it could have came out of that. It could have came out of many other areas. But that's just the way they decided how to do it this year. And
do you know who, I got some weird questions today. I guess I'm in a
mood.
Good.
You're good.
Do you know who underwrites, who does our bond offerings here?
I don't.
Curious.
I can find out for you, though.
I mean, that's some of the big banks. I mean, there's organizations that make a lot of money off bond offerings. Yeah. I mean, that's what they do. They're underwriters for bond offerings, stock offerings, things like that. I'm just curious to know, you know, who's making all the money, because I don't know how many bond issues we have a year or what the size of them are on an annual basis, but that creates a lot of revenue for whoever underwrites bonds.
Exactly.
I'm sniffing out some corruption right here as we speak. I'm just
that's the best part about this show, is you can sniff out a lot of those places where it's like, where's this money going from? You're asking the right questions, and that's why we appreciate coming on every week, because it's a place for us to we can say exactly what we need to say and get our message out there, that we, despite what some people can believe about us sometimes, we're a limited government, lower tax policy group that works in the grassroots to actually get things done. Sometimes that doesn't look as clean as some people want it to be. You know, sometimes we thank people that people don't want us to thank. But at the end of the day, our goal is to get good policy across the line that actually helps taxpayers and reduces the government burden to open up, operate businesses, and for individuals to live their lives.
Well,
that's what we're here for.
You know, y'all do something that drives me and a lot of people like me nuts, but I don't mean that as a criticism. You play the game, but it's, if you don't play the game, nothing gets done.
Yeah,
we'd all like to see the game change.
Exactly.
We'd like to just see us be able to rip politicians a new one and get, you know, frighten them into doing what we want. I don't mean physically, but, you know, just say, this is unacceptable, do what we want. you all have to kind of finesse it. And with finessing it means, you know, doing, you know, thanking people that might not be real popular with a lot of people, but you know, it works. I mean, you have to, Joe Biden right now has been, I can't stand Joe Biden. I just think he's one of the most dangerous men that has ever existed on planet Earth right now. With his speech he gave over in Warsaw was terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah. But he's been doing a deal with the Iran nuclear deal. Well, if that comes out of it, then God bless the Biden administration for maybe doing a deal with Iran. It doesn't mean I like him. It doesn't mean I support Joe Biden in any way, shape, or form. But if they do something right, give them a little bit of credit. It may encourage them to do more right things.
Yeah, so. and that's the thing is what we have to understand is there's a lot of people in the state that are elected handily without anybody running against them. And so there is no voting some people out. As much as I'd love to install a government that does all these limited government lower tax policies and works for the people, that's just not an option. At our current state right now, you have to work within the system and you have to be able to say, hey, listen, thank you for working on this bill. I really appreciate you working on this and putting it out there because you have influence.
And that'll get y'all invited back into their office. You don't alienate everybody. Yeah. And I totally get it. It's just funny talking to you, Stephen Ustroska, Forrest, everybody that's been at AFP that's been in the studio. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it gets frustrating.
But it has to be done.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the hard part is I've determined over the last few years that as much as some people don't like to hear it, I love being able to talk to Democrats openly and honest. And again, we're nonpartisan, but in the state house, I love talking to Democrats about policy because they're going to tell me exactly how they feel. They're not going to say, oh, we're going to support it. We're going to support it. No, they're going to tell me that's a crazy idea. I don't support it, but I'll work with you on this.
Yeah.
And hey, I don't care what party you're from. If you pass good policy, we're never going to compromise on our principles. You know, we never, the tax bill, we'll bring it up later, but this tax bill, we said all these are steps in the right direction, but we don't believe in raising taxes. We don't believe in, and you can go back and look at all our messaging. We do not support raising taxes. However, the tax bill we got to doesn't raise taxes. It just eliminates taxes from, it eliminates income tax, not in the extent, in the full extent, but it does eliminate taxes, and we're happy and proud of that.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, let's take a break. Yep. We'll come back. That's one of the things we want to get to. That's I think what probably most people are interested in.
Yep.
I'm still prepared to be underwhelmed, but maybe you'll surprise me. We're talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around. We will be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. My microphone stand. I hit it the wrong way. It started to fall apart on me there. I panicked. All right, we're talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. I wanted to know what happened with the teacher pay raise before we get into tax stuff.
I went through. I mean, it's
okay.
It's,
so they got the $4,500.
Yeah,
a new portion. Every whatever the hell they got, they just threw a bunch of money at them. Did that come from COVID money or is that
no?
That's
that
budgeted
was, that
money
was a
from
tax,
now on.
That was a raise in taxes.
Yeah,
I mean it was a. To my understanding, if I'm correct on the bill, and I can be corrected next week or whatever, but I believe it was raising taxes. I mean, it went through completely. They had a big signing ceremony at Madison Central High and all this stuff. And, you know, that's I knew it was going to happen this year because they're going to have – over the next 2 years, elected officials are going to be trying to – purchase your votes.
Right.
And that's one of the easiest ones to pass. So,
so we should be looking for Mississippi educationally. Is this the final piece? Now that the teachers are making more money, our students, our education system is going to turn around on a dime.
I can't get into education today. We need to get Starlone to talk about education because that coming from Florida, you know, obviously leaving Mississippi, you know, she lived in Meridian, all this stuff. And then going to Florida and living there for a while and coming back, she's got a lot of experience in education policy that will, I think, can really make Mississippi a different place.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we've got some really cool resources of working on education in Mississippi, but unfortunately, the words fully funding or more funding is always That's always the trope of the education groups,
right?
To come in
it's
and
really
just,
that's every organization.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody says if I had $100 million more dollars, our organization would run perfect. You're the government. That's not how it works.
Yeah,
there's so much corruption. But I know we're running short. But I want to touch on one thing really quickly: the initiative process, and then we'll get into taxes. There was not an agreement reached on the initiative bill.
Oh, really?
No.
So it does not exist
again. It does not exist right now. However, there's some very prominent rumors that the governor, if a decision can be reached beforehand, they'll come together for a special session and pass it. I think that's a very good decision on his part if he can get, again, not the special session part, but returning the power of the initiative process to the people. Now, the problem has been that the House wanted to keep it like it was in the Constitution at 12% of the number of people who voted. The Senate, on the other hand, is actually wanting to require 12% of the number of people who voted in the last presidential election. That number is way higher. So you have, I mean, they've agreed down to like, they've got it down to an actual bill, but those are the two sticking points, is the number of signatures required to get a ballot initiative on the process.
So the Senate wants in a presidential election year, the House wants just in the last election year, or what?
So the House wants exactly what the Constitution says, and that's at 12% of the number of people who voted in the last governor's election.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, I missed
off,
that part.
Yeah, because we're off your election, so the governor's versus the presidential.
Exactly,
that's
a huge difference. I mean, obviously presidential elections versus governor elections, that's a difference right there. So, and it, again, that's going to be an interesting piece to see where we land, whether a special session's called. But luckily, we are down to this number of signatures, and I'm hoping that they can actually figure out a way, again, hopefully if we do a special session, I'm not endorsing or going against a special session right now. I'm just saying if we do a special session, hopefully it's in, out, done, and the bill is, I mean, we give power back to the people to have an initiative process, because a lot of legislators don't want that, because you can do a lot of things, especially in the post-COVID era, and challenging power, and so and also getting certain things removed that legislators don't have the political will to do, but the initiative process can work on that. So now taxes. Like I said, what we've seen is the Mississippi Tax Freedom Act signed by Governor Reeves pushed through.
What's it called? The Tax Freedom Act?
Yeah, something
like that. So I'm free to not pay any tax. I mean, when I hear the words freedom, is there an asterisk behind that? I hate the way they name these things.
Yeah.
Tax freedom.
I understand
freedom
that. Like I said, we've definitely seen a lot of really great stuff coming out of the idea that the legislature is looking at reforming the income tax sections is a huge deal, because, again, when the state established these, I mean, this has become a huge part of our budget. And so luckily the state's been operating a surplus, and so it's time to start cutting taxes. And originally we started with a bill that was going to, or not, the legislature started, the House and the Senate came in with two very different bills. The House plan last year had a bunch of raising taxes
offsets
on individuals and offsets, and reducing the grocery tax, and giving incentives here and there. And luckily, we got to a bill that that finally gets to just eliminating taxes and not working on.
So nothing else moved.
I mean, it's just focusing on income tax.
So tell us exactly what happened then. You went from, did we just abolish the 5% bracket?
So if I'm correct in saying this, we're eliminating the 5% bracket. We're going through some of the 4%, or I can't remember the next one down that we were eliminating on that. But what it'll be doing is, over the next 4 years, they'll be reducing taxes down to where the average Mississippian will be saving, individual, depending on their income. I think the number I've seen is somewhere around 412, and then a couple's like 800 or something like that. And so we're moving further towards down, and then hopefully after 4 years, we'll actually be able to focus on eliminating tax income tax in full, because a lot of, and actually the best part is originally some of the plans were like 12-year elimination, 18-year elimination, 10-year, and so now we're actually hopefully looking
that's
at
an unelimination.
Yeah, I mean it's not actually focusing on the issue. The issue is focusing on income tax and breaking it down over time and not getting involved in a bunch of other taxes or a bunch of other issues. The tax bills were very complicated. And so now we get down to just 4 years of eliminating income tax, certain parts of income tax. And then hopefully over the next 4 years, we can build towards, hey, listen, we eliminated this. Let's build towards the next step, a full elimination.
Would you like to know a citizen's, an economic nerd's interpretation of that caution about that? Forrest hated to talk about this stuff, but if we end up in some level of a financial crisis, which I think in the next 4 years is inevitable with this inflation. I mean, during the next 4 years, we're going to see a recession, probably a deep recession / depressionary type thing. We've just got so much excess in the economy right now. They're going to raise interest rates. It's going to stall out economic activity. Tax receipts are going to go down, probably, notwithstanding if inflation persists. You know, inflation's good for government receipts. You know, the more inflation there is, the more the government collects, because everything costs more, and so sales taxes, all taxes are higher, so they get more money. But my point being, you know, when these things are delayed for a long period of time, 4 years is relatively short, because usually they do these things over 10 years or something like that. But, you know, there's probably, I just see this coming. Well, we were gonna, but who could have seen this recession coming? And now the state is suddenly finding we're not collecting as much money as we used to, so we can't do this or that. And that, you know, is there an office like a, you know, most of the stuff I talk about is kind of federal stuff, and we've got the Congressional Budget Office, and they're always putting out their theories on what's going to happen over the 10. They're never right. They're never even close, because they never account for recessions or bad times. Do we have a group in the state of Mississippi that has any accuracy on forecasting economic stuff in Mississippi?
I think you used the word accuracy. That's going to be accurate. That's going to be the hard part.
Everybody's got a number to say, oh, yeah, next year we're going to get this. And so, you know, they'll tell you in the best case scenario. They always make it look like everything's going to be fine, but nobody ever allows for downturns. And that would be my concern over anything that takes an extended period of time. That's just a lifetime.
I get that. And what I will say is the state did take into account some I would say a good chunk of inflation, what we're looking at, and what could be coming over the next few years. Now, again, you cannot foresee 2008, or you and I can see it because of the numbers and the money in a lot of ways, but I don't think we see the exact. I don't think anybody can predict exactly the low we could hit.
And I'm terrible at it, too. I've been wrong for 6, 7, 8 years now about this kind of thing, so you never know. It's just when I hear these things put over a period of time, I just realize there's so much wiggle room to say, well, we thought we were going to be getting enough revenue in by now because of, you know, this or that, but the recession is knocked us down, so we're going to have to put this off. We can't cut tight, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's going to be part of it. However, luckily right now with this bill going through, more money will be getting back to taxpayers, and we are on the road to actually reducing income tax. And we're also going to be working on a lot of other pieces that set Mississippi apart in the economic space, making sure our regulatory barriers are being reduced, making sure our home-based businesses are protected, because that's going to be a new industry or a big industry that's already happening in Mississippi, but we need to work towards actually securing individuals and their economic ability to make wealth despite the economy.
Well, yeah, like I say, you guys are doing what you can. You're doing it the right way. You're being pragmatic. You guys make progress every single year. The only frustration that people like me have is that you guys are using a chisel, which is what is the appropriate tool for this. I want to use a sledgehammer. My patience for the chisel is, you know, and most people's. But again, I'm giving you guys a complete my support. You're doing it the way it has to be done right now. It just, for those of us that are a little impatient.
And we are building towards sledgehammer moments when they make themselves available.
Yeah.
However, as of this moment, with the way the state is operating, the chisel and medium-sized hammers work in certain ways.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right. Talking to Cade Yates, Americans for Prosperity. One more segment when we come back. Stay with us. All over the world, this is Captain America calling.
I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, Cade Yates with Americans for Prosperity is with me right now, and we're just going to finish up. What's Americans for Prosperity got going on? I know you got a now you start the kind of the grassroots stuff, trying to get people organized for next year, and doing some other things during the course of the year. So tell us about some events.
Doing some educational classes, going to be holding some educational events just so we can teach people about certificate of need laws and many other regulatory areas that we're trying to face right now in the state of Mississippi to make us a little bit more, to make us a lot more competitive in different markets around the U.S. You know, we're trying to make Mississippi the best place to live, work, and raise a family. And so educational events, that's going to be a big thing over the next few months. Also on top of that, we're going to be doing an open house on April 19th. I keep trying to say October. April 19th at 6 o'clock at our office. Go to our Facebook page at AmericansForProsperityMississippi.com or Americans Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook, and you'll be able to see our event there and be able to register online and let us know you're coming. I think it's going to be a great event. We're going to have a lot of people coming in, meeting our new state director, Starla Brown.
Yeah.
Again, great Mississippian who spent a lot of time in Florida and now is coming back. And
What a great state to be coming from right now.
Yeah, I mean,
she's
yeah.
seen freedom, what it looks like. And
exactly.
She can bring us back.
And she's
here.
Been a fighter there for a long time. And so being able to bring some of those fresh ideas and actually challenge some of this stale political culture in Mississippi where
yes.
it's like it's not possible to do this. She challenges me all the time to go, hey, I think we can do this. I think we really can.
Good.
But again, April 19th at 6 o'clock at our AFP office over in Ridgeland. Go to our Facebook page at AFP America's Prosperity Mississippi to find it.
Thanks Gabe. See you tomorrow.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.